You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and guest host Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your today's host, Dr. Melody Fox, clinical psychologist and marriage family therapist, and Alan Cardoza is off today, but we'll be back next week. As each week, we bring you guests that can inspire, educate, entertain, while bringing options to raising the quality of life for the whole family. We address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family interventions, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, world awareness, and so much more. With each of us having over 30 years experience working with families in crisis, we have been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in this field who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. We will bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring to you Answers for the Family. Now today, our guest is going to be talking about hunger as a national issue, because with hunger as a national issue, why is 40% of all food produced in the U.S. wasted? And our guest today is Dana Fries. Dana, I said your name wrong again. I'm so sorry. Fries. I can't look at it and say it at the same time, but Dana Fries, who has spent the last decade working to advance social innovation for a more environmentally and socially changed world. And in college, she worked with administrators, students, local businesses, and organizations as the founder and director of the award-winning Empty Bellies program. So I'm so happy to have you here today to talk about this topic because, you know, I don't know, growing up, I always heard, eat all your food, otherwise it's going to waste.
Right. Yeah. Well, thank you for having me. This is a really important issue, and I'm grateful to say that in the past 6 and 12, 18 months, it's becoming more and more of a widespread and well-known issue nationally.
Well, I understand, too, that worldwide, as we're in communique with the rest of the global economy in the world right now, and I'm trying to talk while my monitor's being fixed, so excuse me if I'm a little distracted here, but we have much more awareness of what's going on in the world globally and how much hunger is going on in the world, and then we see so much hunger here in the United States as well, and yet there's so much waste being produced every day as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really unacceptable, and it's the issue that has kept me engaged and really has troubled me for 13 years now, since I took a trip back after high school to Southeast Asia and really witnessed the struggle and the poverty of so many people abroad. And upon returning and really witnessing the excess and the abundance and the waste here in the United States, it was in such contrast. And then I started to learn more and more about hunger and the extent to which it exists here in the U.S. And to me, that paradox of having so much food that's being thrown away while so many people are hungry is just absurd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I work in the schools, and I just see a lot of waste going on there. A lot of food is tossed in the trash, too. And yet, I have kids on the other end of the corridor that are hungry and haven't eaten.
Right, right. Yeah, and that's one reason we are specifically working with schools within Oakland Unified School District to make sure that's not happening. We received a call from the school district about a year ago, and they were really concerned that so much food was going in the trash when so many kids in Oakland don't necessarily have enough nourishment at home. And so we've developed a program that currently exists in 2 schools, and we're expanding to several schools over the course of this year and next year, to make sure that food from the cafeteria is saved and stored in a refrigerator and then distributed to students and their families at the end of the school day.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. A way to keep people being fed. And, You did this award-winning program called Empty Bellies, and before we get more into a lot of the other things that you're doing, can you tell us what Empty Bellies is exactly?
Oh, yeah, sure. So Empty Bellies was a program I started in 2003 back at Sarah Lawrence College. And at this time, I was absolute hippie chick. I walked around barefoot. I had dreadlocks, a long, flowy pink skirt. And I walked around the town, and I walked into businesses, and I asked if they would donate their leftover food at the end of the night. And I was offering to come pick it up and drive it into the Bronx, where there was a soup kitchen called Part of the Solution. Mm-hmm. And that's how it started. And it was one business and three business and five and ten eventually. And we even convinced the school dining hall to donate food after every lunch and dinner. And by my senior year, we had 45 students involved. And our excess in this one little town was filling up an entire car every single night and helping to feed about 500 people in the Bronx. And this program is actually nowhere near as effective and expansive as the more recent Food Recovery Network, which is a network of young people on college campuses that are doing food recovery, and they're having an incredible impact.
So when you talk about food recovery, what kind of food is recovered?
Yeah, it's there's a lot of food out there to be recovered for sure. A lot of bread. There's actually kind of a well-known problem within the food recovery space, which is there's too much bread. There's this real overproduction of bread from bagel shops and bakeries and way too many pastries. And so there's a lot of bread, and that's just a reality. But it's also damaged fruit and vegetables, anything that is not cosmetically perfect is often tossed out, because you and I know if you go to the grocery store, you're going to see perfect-looking heads of lettuce and perfect-looking cucumbers and eggplants. Everything is very similar-looking. Mm-hmm. And so anything that kind of is cosmetically imperfect often gets tossed out. And then there's dairy products that may be past their sell-by date. Mm-hmm. So it's a wide range of items. Things that, any cans that may be dented, boxes that may be damaged are also recovered. And with the Food Recovery Network, with Empty Bellies, the food that we were recovering was actually prepared hot food. So it's a pasta salad. It's a lasagna, a tray of lasagna, a tray of broccoli, a tray of chicken fingers, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So whatever was not eaten or sold that day was given away.
Exactly.
That sounds like a great, great program. And I've seen some of that in the local communities go to like senior housing areas where a couple, I don't want to mention any names on the air, but a couple of larger local, I guess, trying to think what I would call them. Let's just call them grocery stores, local grocery stores, that actually take their day-old stuff that they're not going to sell in the store anymore and take them to, like, senior citizen areas where a lot of elderly are not getting enough to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And passing out.
Yeah, that's another part of this whole hunger issue that's really tragic, is there's really these individuals in our society that are often hidden from plain sight, that are underfed, and seniors in some cases are having to choose between purchasing food or purchasing their medication. Mm-hmm. And perhaps because of disability or just age, they most likely aren't able to get to a place like a food assistance center or a soup kitchen. And there may be personal reasons why they don't want to do that anyway. Mm-hmm. And so it's so sad to think of seniors who are struggling to be fed when we know there's so much food being tossed out all around us.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm just thinking, you know, what do you think grocery stores could do to prevent more food waste? I know you mentioned collecting, you know, some of the past sell dates once they get to that point where they can't sell anymore, to put that up or donate that. What other things do you think they could be doing?
There are a lot of things that grocery stores can be doing. Food recovery and food donation is one very important part of a grocer's strategy to reduce food waste. Another way that grocers can really try to limit their wasted food is by providing deals on things that are soon to expire or maybe slightly damaged or misshapen. And there's a store here in the Bay Area that does that really successfully. It's called the Berkeley Bowl. Mm-hmm. And they sell nearly expired, you know, imperfect produce for about 99 cents in these bags. And they estimated they sell about $1,500 per day.
Wow.
off of that bargain shelf. So they're taking something that another store might just inherently throw in the trash, and they're actually making some money off it and really developing, encouraging customers and maybe engaging some people within their store that might not otherwise come to the store because it might be a little too expensive. But then it also moves people in the direction of being creative, mm-hmm. having a bag of zucchinis and apples, what can you make? Or, oranges and peppers, what can you make? You know, so, and I think that's one thing that we need to move forward. But one thing we're really working on with grocers here in the Bay Area is shifting their thinking about food recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Because traditional food recovery, like my Empty Bellies model back in college, and like the Food Recovery Network model, which is phenomenal, and Food Runners in San Francisco, all of these models are heavily, almost entirely dependent on volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
And that has significant limitations. Because when you have a volunteer network and when you have no financial resources supporting the work, it's very hard to increase impact, purchase any necessary infrastructure. And so we've really identified these limitations within the food recovery space, and we're trying to develop a fee-for-service model around food recovery where the grocer actually identifies the value of, instead of paying for waste disposal, mm-hmm. instead of sending 500 pounds of food to the landfill and paying for the removal of that food,
mm-hmm.
why not pay for the recovery of that food and have that food be recovered and redistributed and eaten by people in the community? And that's what we're trying to pitch, and I think that's a really great way for a grocer to take a step up and be an innovator and be a leader in their field.
And that does sound really great, and that's on you know, in the supermarket, in the community. I'm just curious, what do you think families could do to help with this problem, or can they?
Oh, yeah, of course. About $40 billion each year is wasted in households on food that gets thrown away in this country. So each and every one of us has a role to play. We're not only wasting money when we waste food, but we're wasting all the resources that went into that food, like water and energy and soil, and of course we're wasting the nutrition itself. So we all have a role to play, and there's so many ways that families can work to really develop habits that utilize their food more effectively and are more conscious of food that is good and food that is going bad in their home. So we actually have a lot of tips on the Food Shift website. It's foodshift.net. And we have a section called Reduce Your Waste. And the Reduce Your Waste section has everything from how you can reduce your waste when you are at home,
mm-hmm.
when you are eating out, when you're shopping, when you're at the market or the grocery store. And so one of the most important things is really taking inventory. So knowing what's in your fridge. So that means every few days kind of shuffling things around. And it's a new habit, most likely, for people. But once you start doing it, you'll start to be so much more familiar with what's in your fridge and what needs to be eaten and rotating the things that need to be eaten sooner
mm-hmm.
to the front.
Yeah, I'm always
Another big...
Oh,
go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm always amazed when I actually take the time to go in my refrigerator how many foodstuffs I do have to throw out because I forgot it's in the back of the refrigerator and I just didn't get to it. So to be more aware of what you have and rotate, I like that idea of shifting things around, taking a look, and seeing what you have so you could use it so you don't waste it.
Right. And one thing I do is really try to challenge myself to make a meal out of what is already in the fridge. So instead of going to the store or saying we need more food, say, well, you know, I bet we can come up with something. And maybe it's something you wouldn't have normally had in your menu plan, but get creative. And there's so many resources and menus or recipes online these days. You can type in any list of ingredients and some kind of delicious recipe will come up. Mm-hmm. So that's another suggestion. Definitely be aware of food date labels and what they actually mean, because there was a big report that came out just a couple weeks ago by the Natural Resources Defense Council focused on how incredibly confusing and deceiving date labels are mm-hmm. on food and how they lead to so much wasted food because people are often perceiving that date as an indicator that that food is no longer good to eat, mm-hmm. that it's expired, that it's unsafe. When in reality, the date labels on food are not federally regulated and they are not an indication of when that food is spoiled. And there's best by, there's sell by, there's used by, and often those dates are to indicate to retailers when they need to either pull the food off the shelves, when they can no longer sell it, but it's not really meant to tell you that the food is unsafe to eat.
Because that is really confusing, and I often wondered about that because I heard, you know, like canned tomatoes or canned peaches or jarred peaches, they could last forever on the shelves, yet when you go to the grocery store, there's a sell-by date or use-by date. So just because it has expiration date on it that ended a couple months ago doesn't mean it's bad unless the can or the jar is damaged. Isn't that correct?
Right. Exactly. And so we need to bring back a lot more common sense into how we work with food. I mean, for example, if a pepper is a little wrinkled, it's not as fresh and it probably won't taste as crisp and delicious, but it would be perfectly fine in a soup or blend it up into a sauce of some sort. Or if there's a little bit of mold on a piece of bread or cheese, that can also be cut off. And so, I mean, those might be more advanced food waste reduction tips for someone at home. But we certainly need to be more thoughtful around how we can utilize the food that's before us.
Right, and I know you've traveled the world and you've noticed how other countries deal with this issue. And are there some models for food waste elsewhere that you have seen or read about that you would like to see implemented more here in the United States?
Yes, absolutely. I'm glad you asked. There's a campaign that's been very successful in the United Kingdom. And the campaign is called Love Food, Hate Waste. And they have done a number of things to increase awareness about the problem of food waste and inundating the community with solutions and what they can do about it. And what the result has been is 18% of food waste has been reduced over the course of 5 years. They have standardized date labels so they're not so confusing to consumers. And they have helped to get 12,000 grocery stores on board that provide storage instructions for fruits and vegetables and informational tips and ads that are displayed directly next to those different food products. Some of these stores are also offering buy one, get one free promotions. Oh, instead of buy one, get one free promotions, they're offering buy one, give one free, or buy one now and get one later, because the problem that we really have here is if you see a buy one, get one free offer, you're excited and you get two of these things, but the reality is you might not need two big jugs of milk. You might not need two big jugs of yogurt. Mm-hmm. Are you really going to get through those before they go bad? So kind of giving people the option of getting a good deal, but giving away that second one or getting it at a later date.
That's really interesting. I'm wondering how they would implement it here.
It all starts with piloting these programs, and that's one thing that FoodShift is really excited to do, is just give some of these programs a chance and try them with some grocers, see how they work, track the impact, see what the response is from customers. Are customers thrilled because now they're saving money, they're reducing waste, and they're feeling better because they're not having such a negative impact on the environment by throwing away so much of this food?
Yeah, because there is a lot of food waste. And I see it every day when I go out in the alley to dump my trash. I see a lot of food in there. And I do see a lot of people going in the trash, pulling out food as well. So, you know, is there a way that, you know, if you have some canned food, say you're, or other food that's not bad, but you know you're not going to eat, is there a good way to set that out for other people to pick up, or a place that you might be able to donate that to?
Absolutely. There are more and more technologies and apps and resources coming up every day to help people redirect excess food in their community. There's an organization called Ample Harvest, and Ample Harvest helps people who have excess food, primarily produce, from their backyard gardens, and links them with food assistance centers nearby that can utilize and distribute that food to people in need. So Ample Harvest is a really great resource. There's a website, a tool called FreeCycle, and of course Craigslist has a free board, and I have been using it for probably 10 years to post about excess food that we have. We've even done it after family dinners from Thanksgiving or Christmas. Sometimes there's just too much ham or too many cookies or something like that. And you'd be surprised how many people actually look to those sites to get additional nutrition for themselves or their families. And then there's some more creative kind of new technologies like Leftover Swap, which is an app you can actually download, and it will help you share your excess food or your leftovers with neighbors. So someone nearby could actually come to your home and pick up food. And this is particularly useful if maybe you're leaving town for a week and realize you have a fridge full of your CSA box or some kind of food. It's a great way for you to pass that off to someone in your neighborhood.
Well, I just never thought that technology could help that way in such a close proximity of where you live, especially when you were talking about clearing out your refrigerator and passing along food that you're not able to eat anymore. It's just amazing to me how all this works. But what's really amazing is how you got started. I mean, what really innovated you to even start that Empty Bellies? I know you notice a lot of food waste in your community when you're back in college, but not a lot of people would do anything about it.
Yeah. I grew up in a really resourceful, waste-free family in Maine where my parents saved everything. And so that waste consciousness was really developed and ingrained into me at a really young age. So I'm sure that was part of it. I mean, my dad would pick up a rubber band on the side of the road and save it for later, or a piece of string. I mean, he would save everything. And so there was that consciousness. My parents were also activists, so I was inspired by them always being very active, and they were real doers in the community, making things happen, making the community and their workplace better. And for me, what really set me off was seeing tray after tray after tray of perfectly good food being dumped down the garbage disposal while on my college campus. It was everything from, you know, pizza and spaghetti and fish. I mean, it was just such a wide range of food. I just had this very intense reaction internally. Not only was I witnessing it, but I was almost feeling how wrong it was. It's as if I was watching or seeing an entire field of clear-cut trees. There's just something inside that I knew was wrong. And I was at Rochester Institute of Technology at the time when I first witnessed that, and I had also been doing some volunteer work going into the abandoned subway tunnels and areas in Rochester where the hungry and homeless were living. And so I, on one hand, was in this institution where so much food was going in the trash, and then having this experience where we're walking around in the middle of February, it's, you know, 15 degrees out, and we're offering people food and shelter for the night. So it was just that stark contrast between excess and abundance and incredible need that really propelled me to start Empty Bellies and now So Food Chef.
Well, it what's interesting to me when you're talking here is it basically started with your parents and their awareness that they passed down to you. And I think that's a wonderful thing for any parents listening today is to remember how much their behaviors and how what they do in the world affects their child and what their child takes with them. And how it can manifest
Absolutely.
In doing things that you're doing that are just amazing, I think, for a young woman.
Well, thank you. The one challenge I find in today's food culture is how incredibly disconnected we are from our food. And I spent yesterday at the farmers market in Oakland and spoke with so many people and their kids there, and I think that's something that is really powerful for kids to see, that food doesn't just come from a grocery store, but there's actually a farmer behind it. And you can ask how it was grown. Where did it come from? And most likely at the farmer's market, it's coming from within, you know, 100-mile radius instead of 1,500 miles, like much of the food in this country. So I think that's so important that parents talk to their children about where food comes from, and all the resources that go into getting food to your plate. We've been talking about developing a poster that demonstrates the life cycle of a banana. Hmm. And it's such a simple, common food almost in every American home. Yet how much goes into getting that to your home for 69 cents a pound or however much it costs? It has to be grown. There's water. There's fertilizer. It has soil extracted from the earth to give it those nutrients. And then it's picked. There's labor involved. And then transportation. It has to be boxed up and stored. I mean, there's so much that goes into getting that food to your mouth. Mm-hmm. It's incredible. And when you think of food in that way, it's much easier to have this deep respect for food and appreciation for it, and much harder to just toss it in the trash.
Right, and we're so used to this instant gratification. Oh, we want a bag of cherries. We go down to the store and we get a bag of cherries instead of actually maybe taking a trip out and picking them yourselves and really appreciating the beauty of the fruit. And also, there are so many areas of the country at one point that they wouldn't have fresh oranges or grapefruits only during certain times of the year. And now with all our international markets and things going across the country, being grown in other places, it's sent here. Our wintertime, their summertime, we get fruit year round and we're so blessed with that. But I don't know if we all appreciate it that much.
Yeah, one thing that's really important in the food waste reduction space is figuring out how we can preserve the food, because we really are dealing with food that is already past its prime, and it's still good, but maybe only for 24 to 48 hours. Mm-hmm. So it has a really limited time frame, or there's a bruise or a blemish or a little spot of mold that it needs to be processed. And so one thing Food Shift is working on with a couple of different partners is using some recovered food that is excess, misshapen, cosmetically imperfect, whatever, from different locales like farmers markets and grocery stores, and taking it into a kitchen and processing it. Mm-hmm. So making it shelf stable, turning it into jams or soups or chutneys or sauces that can then be sold. And this is an important part, too, going back to the importance of creating a fee-for-service food recovery model that is financially self-sustaining. If we can create these products from something that would have otherwise been wasted, and we can create these delicious soups and jams and chutneys and sauces and sell them, then we can actually generate some revenue to sustain the program and employ people in the process. And that's what we're really interested in, is this intersection of food waste and hunger. How can we connect the dots between the two? But then you have to dig deeper, because how do you actually tackle the problem of hunger? Well, hunger is a problem that's really rooted in economic inequality. So people are economically disadvantaged. They don't have work, employment to have financial resources to buy the food that they need. So can we put people to work recovering food, redistributing food in different ways, and processing food so that we can not only preserve the food and reduce the waste, but also redistribute this valuable nutrition into the community more broadly?
And I want to talk more about that, but I just looked at our time. We need to take a quick break. So if you could hold on just a moment, we'll continue more with Dana Fraz. She is our guest today on Answers for the Family. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back with more Answers for the Family. I'm your host today, Dr. Melody Fox. Alan Cardoso will be back next week. And our guest today is Dana Fraz. She is, well, she's doing a lot of wonderful work, but she's also the founder and director of the award-winning Empty Bellies program. And her big topic today and every day is about food waste awareness and taking action. And Dana, welcome back. And I did want to talk a little bit more before we went to the break. We were talking about how, you know, the economically and the people that are hungry, and how we could combine the two to help serve, you know, preserve the food instead of it going to waste. And I was thinking when you were talking earlier about how, I was just wondering if there are many loopholes or many obstacles in the way from governing that to make sure that the food is processed in a healthy way. Because you hear about, you can't do this in your kitchen, you can't even make cookies anymore and give them to the school, you can only give wrap things. So how does that play into it? I'm just wondering the politics part, and does that create a problem in passing along food?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, food safety is incredibly important, and so there's always challenges or barriers, if you want to call them that, in working with food. You have to be very, very careful that things are kept at the right temperature, stored properly, produced properly, all that. So, yes, in terms of that, one good thing that we have in this country that I wish more people knew about and would love for anyone who's listening to share this news with at least one friend today, is we have a law called the Good Samaritan Food Act. And the Good Samaritan Food Act was passed in 1996 specifically to encourage the donation of excess food. And it protects food donors, anyone, restaurants, grocery stores, catering companies. It protects them from liability as long as they're donating to a nonprofit. And a lot of businesses are concerned about liability. There's this myth that's really been perpetuated that a business can't donate or shouldn't donate or won't donate because if someone eats that food and gets sick, they'll be sued. Well, this is so common in our thinking that I hear it almost every day when I talk to people. Mm-hmm. And yet no one knows about the Good Samaritan Food Act, and no one is aware that there's actually not been cases that have resulted in people getting sick from donated food. There's a book called American Wasteland by Jonathan Bloom, mm-hmm. and he researched this topic of food waste in America for years and years and years. And he indicates in his book that through all his research, he was unable to find one case in which someone receiving donated food had actually sued the business. So it's really important we know that, mm-hmm. and we're really honest with what's happening with this donated food, and we need to know about the Good Samaritan Food Act because it specifically encourages food donation and protects food donors as long as there's been no gross negligence, as long as they haven't knowingly damage the food. And on another comment, on I know you mentioned the bake sale thing, and this is just a crazy national rule that you're actually legally not supposed to have these bake sales for your church or your school. But we are so fortunate here in California because we just passed the cottage food law, and the cottage food law specifically allows for the creation of homemade goods and the creation and sale of those homemade goods. So I could actually create banana bread or cookies or granola or spiced nuts, anything that's really shelf-stable that doesn't need refrigeration. Mm-hmm. And I could sell that after making it in my home kitchen. Wow. And so that's a huge win for anyone that's creating jams or breads or cookies or any kind of those products. You can actually legally make them in your home and sell them now.
As far as California goes.
Right. Okay. And I think there's a few other states that have a cottage food law as well. I believe North Carolina is one of them, and I'm sure there's a few others.
But that, again, would be a great way of utilizing if, say, you have a whole row of black raspberries in your backyard and you can't possibly eat them all. You can make a bunch of jams and jellies and sell them. Or you could donate
exactly.
it. Either way. I have a couple listener questions here for you, and one of them has to do with what we're talking about. But it says, we have owned 3 restaurants in New York for 10 years, and up until last year, 2012, we were allowed to donate excess to the local shelter. Now we can do nothing unless it's canned foods. Bloomberg outlawed food donations to homeless shelters because the city can't assess their salt, fat, and fiber content. It was all over the news and a great shame. We would love your comments.
Yeah, that's tricky. I have also been aware of some food banks or food assistance centers that are not accepting certain food. And that's tough because the food banks and some of these larger food assistance centers are the ones with the larger networks. Mm-hmm. My comment to that would be that there's always more people and more organizations, entities that need that food. And it just requires being a little more creative and doing a little more research and outreach to finding the venues for that food. I get calls all the time from catering companies, grocery stores that are looking for an outlet for their excess food. Mm-hmm. And then what Food Shift does is we try to redirect that food in the community. And we know about their Section 8 housing, low-income housing, where they have hundreds of people living in these buildings. And most of them could use a little support nutritionally. And so there's a place to donate some food that would have most likely fewer restrictions on what they can receive. There's often after-school programs or churches that have some kind of network of people who need excess food. So I would recommend doing a little bit of digging around, just kind of asking around, doing a little outreach, even posting on a community board, posting on FreeCycle or Craigslist, and trying to ask the community where some of this excess food could be diverted.
Mm-hmm. Those are great ideas, too. And I was sitting here thinking, you know, you are such an activist for this, and you have such a passion for this, and I was wondering, what has been the toughest part for you as an activist and a social entrepreneurial person in this effort?
It's tough shifting a paradigm. It's really tough to be trying to shift the culture. I mean, our culture is very, unfortunately, very wasteful, and it's at the cost of really damaging our environment. I mean, our materialistic lifestyles in the U.S. have such a negative social and environmental impact, not just here, but around the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to promote our diets and our food system here, we are chopping down trees all over the world to grow more food, in some cases to feed animals so that we can get all of our meat consumption.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we are using so much of the water in this country for agriculture, and about 25% of all of our fresh water in this country is being used to produce food that we're just throwing away.
That does
so 25% of our fresh water is basically just going in the trash with this food. So for me, this is such a big issue, not only on this hunger and nutrition and social justice level, but on this environmental level, too. We're wasting not only the nutrition, but the water and the soil and the fossil fuels and labor. We're wasting people's time. We're adding to the world's carbon footprint, because whenever food sits and rots in a landfill,
mm-hmm.
it creates methane, an incredibly powerful greenhouse gas. So the fact that the largest portion of our solid waste is food
mm-hmm.
going to a landfill, that means we're creating a lot of carbon and really diminishing the quality of our air in the process. So I see this as an environmental issue, a social issue, and then lastly is really a spiritual issue, because we've become so disconnected from our food, and we've become so disconnected from how fortunate we are to have this food in front of us and all the resources that go into it. So for me, that's the challenge, but it's equally met by each and every day that I'm working, being incredibly inspired by the people I'm working with and the individuals that are stepping forward and wanting to make change in their schools, in their businesses, in their institutions, or in their homes. It's so incredibly inspiring to see this shift happening.
And that's so appropriate. It's called Food Shift.
Right.
Yeah, shifting the awareness of food and its impact and the impact you can make by preserving it and passing it along and not putting it to waste and just throwing
mm-hmm.
it out. I had another listener comment come in here. It says, at our school, we have started a program in our lunchroom to assess the foods kids will not eat, as it tends to be the healthy items rather than change the menus. We've brought in the home ec class to come up with recipes the kids would like. Going from blah to delicious is how they titled the program. The kids love being involved, and their friends are so supportive that our waste has decreased substantially, but not at the expense of the quality of the food, which is kind of like what you were talking about earlier, reinventing the food that would have gone to waste. And they're saying, we wondered what other suggestions you might have for our group.
That's really exciting. That sounds like such a good program. And I think getting the kids really involved in the food. I mean, I've heard parents say before that their kid would never eat a tomato or, you know, would never joyfully eat a vegetable until they actually grew it at home. And then they were picking those cherry tomatoes off of the bush and eating them like candy. So I think having the kids involved in the process of designing the food and designing the menus is brilliant, and I love that. There's an organization, or a company rather, called Revolution Foods, and they started, I believe, about 7 years ago, specifically tackling this issue that so many kids at school don't like the food that's being served, and I can see why,
mm-hmm.
based on our work with schools in the past few months. And they have done a lot of research and a lot of testing to find out what are the foods that kids like and is super nutritious. Mm-hmm. And so Revolution Foods has a lot of ideas and great programs, and they actually, they're looking to expand to more schools. So I don't know if that would be a possibility, but sometime if a school can contract with Revolution Foods, they can bring in more nutritious food that kids actually like.
Yeah, that would be great. I know I work in a middle school right now part of the time, and I've eaten in the lunch cafeteria, and I can understand why most of it goes in the trash, which is such a waste. I mean, it's pretty bland. It's pretty tasteless. There's not much to it.
And those of us that eat nutritious food on a daily basis, we know it can be really, really, really delicious. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of figuring out how to make it that way for kids. And sometimes it even comes down to how it's cut, you know, the size of the carrot. I mean, a kid doesn't want to eat a big chunk of a carrot, but if it's a baby carrot, you know, they'll eat it. So really, everything from the color and the size and the sauce and the... So there's a science to it, but it is possible. And I know Revolution Foods would have some good tips in that regard.
Well, that's a great idea. In fact, I think I'm going to look that up and pass that along to the school district I work with. I think
great.
That's a great idea. Now, so you've talked about some of the solutions in helping with this issue of food waste in America and the United States. Do you have any other solutions or any other ideas?
Yes. One thing we haven't really talked about is food waste that happens at the restaurant level. Mm-hmm. And that's really tricky because for the most part, the waste that's happening at the restaurants is waste that's left on the plate after the meal. And there's really no way to capture that and feed it back to another human. So what Food Shift is doing is developing a partnership with Satisfeito, which means satisfied, and they are a Brazilian-based company that has set up this model where restaurants offer a reduced portion to customers if they want it. So a customer can say, I would like the Satisfeito portion, and it's a two-thirds of the normal meal. And what that does, it allows the customer to really eat the amount of food that they are more that they're more in the mood for, and, you know, properly fill their belly but not overfill their belly. It allows the restaurant to save some food and money because they're not having that food go on the plate and then in the trash. And what we're offering is that Food Shift would receive about $1 or $2 on each of those dishes. So the money saved by the restaurant, they would be keeping some of it, but then they kind of give a couple dollars to Food Shift so that we could expand our work in the schools and with the grocery stores and with the processing and the job creation, so we could expand that work. So it's really a win-win-win for all parties. And in the process, it's increasing awareness about the food waste problem and about the hunger problem and giving the restaurants, the customer, an opportunity to engage and be part of the solution.
Wow, that is great. I really like that idea because sometimes you go in and you realize you don't want to eat that much, but what a way you could give back as well.
Right. So we are currently looking for restaurants based in the Bay Area that would be interested in piloting this program with us. Mm-hmm. So if anyone has any suggestions, please send them along to Food Shift. We would love to hear the suggestions. And another big campaign we have going on right now, we have advertisements throughout the Bay Area rapid transit system, throughout the subway. And these ads are really inspiring people to think about this issue and inviting people to go to our website and sign the Food Shift Pledge. And this is a pledge where you're making a commitment. You're saying, I am going to reduce my food waste, and I'm going to encourage others to do the same. And we give a few tips. And so I'd love for anyone listening today to go to the foodshift.net website and sign the pledge.
That sounds like a great idea. And real quick, if there were restaurants not in your area that wanted to participate, could they still contact you?
Yes, absolutely.
Because I think it would be a great program to get set up somewhere. If it doesn't happen in the Bay Area, there's got to be a community that would be interested in doing this. And I also really like the idea on how parents can role model for their kids going out into these restaurants and being part of this program, being part of the solution to reduce the food waste in America.
Right, right. And we all know that there's a big problem with overeating in this country as well. So it's also kind of addressing that issue at the same time, giving people, the portion sizes are often way too large, so giving people the option to really slim that down a little bit.
Absolutely. Well, Dana, I wanted to say we are out of time, unfortunately. Our time went really fast. I'm really glad you were here to talk about this and bring this to our awareness, because it is an ongoing issue, and we do have to find ways to have less waste in America, utilize our food in a more healthy way, and also that doesn't interfere with food that we need to produce ongoing for the rest of our kids and grandkids and so on and so forth.
Well, thank you. I've really enjoyed talking with you.
Well, I really appreciate talking with you, too. I'm sorry about a little technical difficulty on this end. A little distracting for me, but I love what you were talking about, and I'm glad we were able to talk about most of what you're doing. If people want to get a hold of you, just go to Foodshift, that's FOODSHIFT.net, for more information, and we'll be putting that on our website as well as probably some of the other websites that you had mentioned during our conversation today. Our guest today was Dana Fraz, and she is the founder and director of the award-winning Empty Bellies program, and it sounds like a worldwide activist and making sure everybody knows about food waste awareness and what we could do about it in America. So thank you so much, Dana, for joining us today on Answers for the Family.
Thank you.
And have a wonderful day, and keep going.
Thanks so much.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and guest host Dr. Melody Fox, right here on LA Talk Radio.